Jade from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out over Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing all right, John. Doing all right. The world still burns around me as we slip slowly into madness.
But don't the flames look pretty?
They sure do shine bright.
Yeah.
Is that a Mr. Mike quote? Was that what you're going for?
Oh, yeah. I think it might be. Yeah.
Michael O'Donohue.
He said something like that in the movie about Doug Kenny, Futile and Stupid Gesture.
Yes, that's what I thought you were mentioning. I thought you were referring to that.
I think I just internalized it, and yeah, but I think that was a real Michael O'Donohue quote. So yeah.
Wow. All right. So wow, we're getting off to a rip roaring start.
We really are. We really are. And we should say we have a special guest this week.
Yeah, we're fumbling already in front of our lovely guest.
Yes. Yeah.
You may know him as he's one of the co-hosts of the Medium Popcorn podcast, a movie podcast. It's a hilarious podcast. I listen to it all the time, and he's a hilarious comic, an amazing dude. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Mr. Brandon Collins.
Hey, woo! Thanks for having me during the end of the world. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. If there's anybody,
Happy to have you here, Brandon. We've both guest starred on Brandon's Medium Popcorn podcast.
That's right.
In the past. And so now we're returning the favor.
Oh, I appreciate it. I mean, I kind of wish it was under different circumstances for the film, but I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we're...
This is interesting. I find this fascinating because you requested this film.
I know. You know what it is? I thought I remember really, really enjoying this, and it turns out I only like Chris Farley in like very short bursts because I'm thinking about Billy Madison where he pops up, or like, you know, any of the other, like, you know, that whole crew was doing a bunch of movies. And yeah, I really, the whole movie, the whole time watching Tommy Boy, I was like, man, I really wish I was watching Billy Madison right now.
Okay, well, as Brandon said, our movie this week is Tommy Boy from 1995, starring Chris Farley and David Spade, and another SNL alum, Dan Aykroyd.
That's right. This movie came out March 31st, 95, directed by Peter Segal, written by Bonnie and Terry Turner. If those names sound familiar to you, because they were SNL writers, and they've written a couple of movies that we've already talked about. They wrote The Coneheads, Wayne's World 1 and 2. And then they went on to create Third Rock from the Sun and That 70s Show.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good career pedigree there. These are people who know some funny stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So the movie, the budget was 20 mil. This grossed about 32 mil. So this was one of those films. It was a modest hit when it came out. But then as the years went on, it became more and more of a big cult hit.
Now, this was interesting. Now, like, Darren, you had seen this movie before, right?
Yeah, I did see it in the theaters when it came out, but I did see it on, like, DVD, like, years ago.
Okay. I had never watched this before, so this was fresh territory for me going in. And, Brandon, you were revisiting it after, I'm guessing, quite some time?
Oh, yeah. Like, this is a big thing back when I was in high school, watched this a lot, but I have not watched this since I've been in my late 20s to early 30s. And so revisiting this was like, it was interesting because it made me realize how much I do like the younger Adam Sandler movies, except for Little Nicky, and not so much the Chris Farley movies. Like, there's a reason why I picked Tommy Boy and not Black Sheep, because I actually remember not liking Black Sheep.
Yeah,
I don't think the people who made Black Sheep like Black Sheep.
Yeah, Black Sheep was a bit of a letdown. But let's get into this first. Like, as we ask all our guests when they come on our podcast, would you consider yourself an SNL nerd? Are you a huge fan of Saturday Night Live, or moderate fan? Like, do you have any favorite cast members, or like, what's your SNL journey?
Sure. So I would say I am a moderate SNL fan, but a super borderline creepy fan of Lorne Michaels as a producer. I just want to pick his brain. Like, I read the SNL, 30 year breakdown, because I just want to understand how Lorne Michaels works. He's so specific and has such a unique approach to running this show. So I've always been fascinated by Lorne Michaels. Obviously, the Eddie Murphy SNL. I mean, for me, like as a kid, I have the VHS in my living room right now of his best of SNL. So, I mean, without Eddie Murphy, I probably wouldn't be doing comedy. Without watching, like, you know, as a young kid, watching Buckwheat get shot, you know, there is no Brandon Collins comedy or a comedy to do that, right?
Buckwheat had to die so Brandon Collins could fly.
I mean, just the way they filmed that was so funny. Just thinking about it. But then I definitely remember enjoying like some of the Will Ferrell stuff, the Debbie Downer stuff. That's one of my favorite sketches is the Lindsay Lohan sketch where Debbie Downer, like no one could keep a straight face.
Oh, yeah. That was a classic.
Their sketches were like they barely got through it just because everyone was dying laughing.
Yeah.
Trying to think what else. Right now, I really like The Weekend Update. I mean, maybe it's also because I'm biased because I know Michael Che, but like I really like that's the best part of the show for me lately.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's I have like a long-ranging SNL relationship. Like, you know, I definitely watched a lot of Adam Sandler, Chris Rock, all those guys, even though they were only on for very few seasons. But yeah, SNL's always been the purview of my life. And like I said, I study Lorne Michaels as much as I can. I listen to podcasts where they even talk about Lorne Michaels for a few minutes. Like every time Mark Maron mentions Lorne Michaels, I'm like, oh, let me hear more about this because he gets more about how people audition, like what happens when they don't get on SNL. It's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating process. I was just earlier this morning, I was watching YouTube videos where like Bill Hader was talking about his SNL audition and how when Kate McKinnon was auditioning, Bill Hader, he was asked to leave or got thrown out because he was laughing too hard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Classic Hader.
Being all supportive and shit.
It's like, no, Bill, you got to get out. You're bringing too much joy into this room.
We don't laugh at comedy here.
I don't know how you do things in your neck of the woods where you laugh when you see something you enjoy, but here, dead silence.
Yeah, but this was interesting. I mean, this is another, it's not a spinoff of an SNL sketch, but it is a movie produced by Lorne Michaels, and it stars two people who at the time were still on SNL as the show. I was reading that while they were shooting this, they had to fly back and forth between Toronto and New York so that they could rehearse for SNL.
Oh, wait, this wasn't filmed. I mean, it takes place in Sandusky, Ohio, but they didn't film in Ohio?
No, it was filmed like in... I think Chicago and Toronto. Definitely Toronto.
Okay. It looked a little bit like Newark, New Jersey. I was like, ooh, this is rough. They probably filmed this.
Yeah. Rough belt has seen better days.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do.
Okay. Well, I mean, the movie opens up with Tommy, our title character, Tommy Boy, who as an adult will be played by Chris Farley, but as a kid, he's played by another actor, a child actor, if you will. And he's running to school, and we quickly get the impression that he's a very klutzy child, and he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Yeah, like he basically just kind of, I mean, in the opening scene, it's like a little, like you said, a little chubby kid running after the school bus because he missed it again, and they're like, oh, get it together! And it's just like him basically like, running through people's yards, like dropping his lunch, dropping his history books, dogs chasing him, just a mess on wheels.
Well, yeah. Tommy, everyone should have worried about Tommy. Like, I would be, if I were Tommy's friend, if I were just like a bystander, just kind of watching from afar Tommy's progression into a man, I'd be so worried about him. I would always think that he's going to like just fall into a well. And just not.
Yeah. You feel like he's been hit in the head a lot, even at this young point in his life.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing with Tommy. Like, as we see later in the movie, it's like, yes, he is like a screw up and he's very bumbling and he's just sloppy, but he's just so damn lovable. Like, people just like being around him. Like, even though they know he's like, he's just like a big, beefy, sweaty, you know, dog of a man. Like, he's just like a big lovable dog.
Is he though?
I don't think he is. I think everyone seems to kind of just appease Tommy, but no, he like has like inner monologue tantrums out loud.
Yeah.
Hit his head and be like, get it together, man. You're going to lose your life.
You know, like, I feel like that's a good description of Chris Farley. And it seems like the people who knew and loved Chris Farley, they all had a great deal of affection for him. But I got to confess, I did not like Tommy much as a character. I didn't really sympathize with him.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I found him kind of rough going as a protagonist.
He also follows up, which is, you know, not really palatable these days for seeing white guys just follow up and be successful.
Yeah. Hey, that's a good point, too.
There is a lot of that.
Part of the problem.
Like, they're selling car parts. Guys, you understand. They are selling car parts, and they're literally riding around, which by the end of the movie is like the Beverly Hillbillies wagon. Like, they, that's not a good look. It's like if you're trying to sell suits, but you come in with like a, you know, a string as a belt, and like, you know, looking crazy.
Yeah, and also like the car, they go on this road trip like for the middle part of the film, and the car, the running gag is the car is falling apart because it has all sorts of damages happening to it, but it never seems to occur to them to ever get the car repaired. Like, they don't even bring up the idea before like saying, oh, well, we can't do that because of XYZ. It just, it never enters their minds, apparently.
I mean, I'm assuming it's because like maybe they're on a tight schedule and it's like, oh, we don't have time to get this our vehicle fixed. We got to go on the road in a busted vehicle. But
yeah, I don't know. Maybe they should have made that clear. But anyway, Tommy dumb. And then we pick up with him in college, and he's taken his college final, and he's, nothing's changed for him. He's still running late, and he's klutzy and all that. And he walks into his history final, and the first question is about the framers of the Constitution. And it's like Thomas Jefferson and blank Hancock. And he fills it in with Herbie.
That was kind of fun.
That was so stupid.
It's a college final, and the first question is a fill in the blank. Well, that's interesting. Okay.
The 90s were different, man.
Okay.
Oh, and just a quick note. So, Tommy Boy, he was going to Marquette College in Milwaukee, which just happens to be Chris Farley's actual alma mater.
Oh, look at that.
Nice.
That's right.
Look at that. Little hat tip to his actual alma mater.
That's right. So the grades go up to see, and Tommy goes to see if he passed, and he passed his class with a D+.
Yeah, that was wild, remembering, like, you know, that's what movies posited that college was like back then, where they just posted your grades and your name, all your business up on the board.
Yeah, I guess that's not something that's really done anymore. I'm sure if anything, they'd probably just email your scores to you or something.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, the joke here is he goes down the sheet and he sees like a D+ by his name, and you think, oh, he's going to be crushed because he did so poorly on the exam. But no, he's psyched because he's like, yes, I got a D+. I passed. Now I can graduate. And then we cut to him celebrating with his fraternity, and he's upside down. And he exhales a whole bunch of marijuana smoke, and he was, I guess, doing a bong stand. Is that a thing?
I've heard of
stands, but I didn't know bong stands were a thing.
That was creative. I've never seen that before. But you know, it's Chris Farley, and I can imagine he can figure out his way around bong stand if you need it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I certainly, Chris Farley has had greater knowledge of smoking the doobie than I do. So I was just momentarily confused by that. And I was just like, is that a thing, or are they just doing that because it's goofy? I don't know.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
I don't know. Okay. So Tommy Boy, after celebrating, he goes back home to Sandusky, Ohio, where he meets up with Richard Hayden, who is David Spade's character, who is, I guess that was the kid who was making fun of him on the bike in the opening scene.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He called him Richard, so. Okay. They've known each other since they were kids.
All right, all right. And David Spade is, you know, his character kind of a dick in this movie. He's
But his sarcasm, it makes the movie for me. Like, I wrote down on my notes, like, when David Spade appeared and they got to play off each other, that's when I started actually laughing.
Uh-huh. You didn't like Chris Farley operating solo too much, huh?
It was just, you know, I think because I'm older, I'm not into the slapstick, you know, just screaming kind of stuff. But yeah. It had something to play that off of. Like, when he starts, like, mumbling about the phone number he used to try to call his dad. And he's like, 1-9-2-4. He's like, did I catch a niner in there?
Yeah. No, I mean.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, David Spade, he's just really good at playing, like, smarmy, smart-alecky characters. That's pretty much his entire career, if you think about it. But, like, he did get some good zingers in there, too, which I'll admit. Like, there's one part where they were talking about how Tommy Boy finally graduated after being in college for 7 years. And then Tommy's like, yeah, you know, a lot of people go to college for 7 years. And then, you know, quickly Richard says, yeah, I know, they're called doctors.
That was a good line. I did like that line. And I like he made fun of Tommy. He was like, yeah, just shy of a decade. Yeah, nice going. And they do have a genuine chemistry together. They do play off each other well.
Yeah, they make a good duo.
Yeah. So Tommy and Richard, after Richard picks up Tommy at the airport, they go back to Callahan Auto, which is the family business, and it's run by Tommy's father, played by Brian Dennehy, who's Tommy Callahan II, I think.
Yes.
As I said last week, I am always thrilled to see Brian Dennehy in a movie.
Yeah, no, he's a fine actor, and like the chemistry, and even the like he has really good chemistry with Tommy Boy too, with Chris Farley, like the two of them.
Yeah, he was good casting, and he looks enough like Chris Farley. There's enough resemblance there that you can really buy him as Farley's father.
Yeah, just like two big beefy lovable louts.
You just know that these two like ate a lot of ribs on set together.
Oh.
You know?
Oh, man.
Right, good dinosaur barbecue ribs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's all meet up for ribs after this, guys.
Oh,
God damn COVID.
Damn you, COVID.
When the world comes back, we are getting together for some ribs, damn it.
You will not keep me from my plate of ribs, COVID.
So Dennehy, he's been preparing for Tommy to come back and take over the family business. He's got an office for him at the plant, and he's real excited because now Tommy's finally going to join the business and make something of himself. And then they go home, and Brian Dennehy's got some more news. I'm just going to keep calling him Brian Dennehy because I just like saying Brian Dennehy.
Fair enough.
He's got some more news. He's engaged. He's engaged to Bo Derek. Is Beverly, who is his new fiance.
Yeah.
And he met her when she was his trainer at the Fett farm that he went to.
Mm. Yeah, and then we get the shot of Bo Derek coming out of a pool in a bikini, mm-hmm. much like in the movie she was in, 10. At one point, like Tommy Boy actually says, wow, Dad, she's like a 10.
Yeah, and apparently Brian Dennehy was also in the movie 10.
Oh, I must admit, I've never seen the movie 10.
Me too. But I know about that scene because I'm a creep.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen all of movie 10. I think I've seen about half of it, maybe the last half of it. But I don't remember Brian Dennehy in it. So
you saw 5, if you saw half of it.
Yeah, I guess I did. I saw 5, 5.5. You know. Uh-huh.
Hey-o, dad jokes.
So Brian Dennehy and Bo Derek are engaged, and it's very exciting because Tommy Boy, he's got a new stepmother, and then they reveal that Beverly has a son, and Tommy's really excited because he's never had a brother. He's always wanted a brother, never had one. And the doorbell rings, and the door opens up. It's his new stepbrother, soon to be stepbrother, and it's Rob Lowe.
What?
Young ass Rob Lowe.
Yeah, I didn't know Rob Lowe was going to be in this movie. Well, I mean, because he's apparently uncredited in this movie, I read.
I saw that because I remember when I was looking for Tommy Boy, and I looked at the cast, and I'm like, pretty sure Rob Lowe's the bad guy, and then like he finds it.
Wait, hold on.
On IMDb trivia, it says that he is uncredited because Rob Lowe was contractually obligated to Stephen King's The Stand at the time, so he took the part simply as a favor for friend Chris Farley.
Oh, wow. But he could have paid, though.
Oh, I presume so, yeah.
That's right. Rob Lowe ain't free.
No. I mean, you know, even when you're friends with Chris Farley, Rob Lowe's got to get paid. So it's Rob Lowe, and he's fulfilling it's a part very much like what he's done in the other SNL movies we've seen in the Wayne's World movies. He's just in the first one, right?
The
second one was Christopher Walken, right?
He's the bad guy. Well, not the bad guy, but you know,
the antagonist.
Trying to get with Tia Carrera, you know.
Hey now.
Yeah. Well, if that makes you bad, I don't want to be good.
11 years wrong, I don't want to be right.
And Paul's, you know, he's kind of a dick. And he's looking down on the Sandusky, Ohio. He thinks of it as a hick town. And Tommy tries to prove him wrong by showing all the fun things to do in the town by keep taking him cow tipping. Have you guys ever been cow tipping? I have not.
I haven't. Even though up in the Midwest and there were farms not too far from me, I have not gone cow tipping.
Darren? I've lived in the tri-state area my whole life. I've never seen cows being tipped. I've heard of it in movies, but no.
Okay. Well, I mean, after we get the ribs, I think we all have to go out cow tipping.
Well, where do you think we're going to get the ribs?
There you go. Okay, so cow tipping, then ribs.
Be like, the rub is made half with his blood.
Oh, God.
Oh, we've got a fun evening planned.
After that, they go cow tipping, of course. I mean, most of this movie is like a lot of Chris Farley being physical. So, he tries to tip the cows. He falls into into the mud and cow poop. And then what else happens? Oh, then the farmer sees him and is like, hey, y'all, get with my cows. And then, like, I think he shoots his gun in the air and they call the stampede of the cows.
Yeah. They get caught in the stampede at the house and of the cows. And then it cuts to them at a gas station. They're hosing themselves off. And Chris Farley just covered with mud, like head to toe.
It may not be all mud.
Yeah. Rob Lowe, I think he just has like, you know, his shoes are ruined and he's got a few flecks of mud on him because, you know, you don't cover up that face.
No.
That's a crime against nature. Rob Lowe is a handsome, handsome man.
It's the moneymaker.
Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, then we go back to the office. Then we see another kind of, I guess, iconic scene where, like, Tommy Boy's in his office and he's talking into his fan and he's doing that Luke, I am your father thing. Which, when I remember when I first saw that, I was like, oh, I thought I was the only one that did that.
It was Chris Farley was putting your life on screen, Darren.
I was like, Chris Farley, how did you know me?
Get out of my head, Chris Farley.
Yeah, and also Chris, and I mean, Tommy Boy introduced himself to everybody else who works in the factory. Then he meets an old friend from college, or old friend from high school, rather, Michelle, who is...
Michelle. Yeah, played by Julie Warner.
Yes.
She's an actress I have not seen in forever. Is she still working? I don't even know.
I think she's still around, but, you know, like little stuff here and there.
I'm going to look her up.
I was so cute in this movie.
Yeah. I remember her from like Doc Hollywood and other stuff. I'm going to see what she's up to now. Let's see. We got Julie Warner here. Yep, she's still working. Her last credit is a thing called Unbelievable.
Oh!
5 explanation points. Yeah. I assume it's that EMF biopic we've all been waiting for.
Oh,
well, tip of the hat to Julie Warner. So then we cut to the wedding. We go to the big wedding between Tommy Sr. and Beverly, and it's so exciting. And we got Chris Farley and Brian Dennehy doing a duet on What Did I Say?
Yeah, that reminded me of like Blues Brothers a little bit.
I could see that. Sure. You know, it's not a bad rendition.
Yeah, I mean, at one point even Chris Farley does some cartwheels, much like Belushi did back in his day.
Yeah, he did a few of those. I was wondering. I don't think we see his face when he's doing the cartwheel, so I was wondering if he was doubled for that, just for safety reasons, if nothing else.
Well, good point. I didn't even think about that.
I don't know, but I did like in the closing credits. I did see Chris Farley listed as a stunt performer, so he apparently did at least a few of his own stunts.
Yeah, like crashing through the table and stuff, probably.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that would probably be enough to get a stunt credit, I would imagine.
Wow, he's like a Jackie Chan.
He really is. Jackie Chan, Chris Farley, they get mistaken for each other all the time.
I mean, Chris Farley wasn't Beverly Hills Ninja.
That's true. He also had a martial arts background, so... So then in the middle of the song, things take a turn where Tommy Sr., he suddenly clutches his chest and he falls down. He drops dead of a heart attack. And I myself horrified at this moment because I was expecting an entire movie with Brian Dennehy. But no, they kill off Brian Dennehy 26 minutes in.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
That very disappointing. Yeah. Very disappointing for me. I wanted to demand a refund of my $1.99 that I paid to Amazon Prime to watch this right then and there. Because 26 minutes of Brian Dennehy, that's not enough, damn it.
Oh, man. You hear that, Amazon? That check better be in the mail.
That's right. We need more Brian Dennehy. That's all I'm saying.
Oh man! So then we cut to the funeral. Everybody's very down about this and upset, of course. Except we'll get into that later. I'm probably getting ahead of myself. But so then the company has a big meeting about this and how Big Tom's death will affect the company.
Yeah, apparently the company's in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Because the founder and the CEO is gone, and they have no one to steer the ship.
Which is always a good reflection of leadership, you know. Like if you pass or are incapacitated, the company just can't keep going. That's
yep. Yeah, like inside of a week, they are on their last legs. That's a good point. He was not a good executive because like it's supposed to be like the mark of a good executive is if you like you go out for lunch, you get hit by a car, the company keeps rolling on.
Yep.
He did not delegate properly.
Yeah, they could have looked into that a little bit more, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent point, Brandon.
And it's
Brian Dennehy,
yeah.
Not a good CEO.
No, it was also sad, too, because he clearly wants his son to be the heir to the company. But everyone at the factory knows that he's a dummy that could barely pass college. Like, why does he already have that reputation? Like... It just like everyone talked to him like he was a child. Like when he did that welding, like it was like he was five still.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I even think there's that one point where Richard kind of commented on that where he walks into Tommy Boy's new office and Tommy's like, "Hey, yeah, look at this awesome new office I got." And Richard's like, "Yeah, well, you know, you've been here 10 minutes, so of course you get an office."
Yeah. I think they could have played up the resentment a little bit more, honestly. Maybe not just for Richard, but, you know, and we could have seen Tommy grow into the role of being the CEO a little more. That might have been interesting. But anyway, I didn't make extensive notes on the ins and outs of this, but it basically they have to make a lot of sales very quickly to fend off this buy offer from one of their big rivals.
Yeah, from Dan Aykroyd, who I'm convinced the way that Dan Aykroyd acts in movies, he's just auditioning for Aaron Sorkin project. Like he talks really fast, really stiffly, even if it has nothing to, like he's not playing off of anyone else in the room.
Mm, yeah. I felt like Aykroyd was having fun with it because he was doing like this strong Chicago accent throughout the movie, and I feel like that's something that Aykroyd really enjoys doing.
Yeah, he's no stranger to Chicago accent. If you've seen the Blues Brothers, you know that. Just I feel like he might have been in a super fan sketch where he did that, but Aykroyd loves just slipping into that Chicago accent, like it's a nice pair of slippers.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good Chicago accent. I like it. He's good.
Yeah, the Irwin Main way. Dude. Oh yeah, it's a bag of glass.
Yeah, bag of glass.
Well, so basically, the company is in trouble. They actually kind of mention this too a little bit when Richard and Tommy drive to Callahan Auto Parts for the first time. They see like a lot of the factories closing down. It's a little bit of a commentary on I guess the Rust Belt, about how like all the auto parts factories just kind of went under and everybody was unemployed. This movie is
Roger and me, Darren. I know what's up.
This movie is the comedic Roger and me.
My grandfather used to work at General Motors in the factories, and this movie made me think if he knew someone like Tommy, he would just be like, this boy gonna come in here and get us killed.
We all going down.
It's like Michael Scott in the factory downstairs, like where he's like making people like break their legs and stuff.
So Brandon, since you have some family experience in the auto industry, how accurate is their depiction of an auto parts factory?
I mean, I've never actually been inside of those things. We always just tried to pop off outside of them when I was a kid, because we used to live in my grandparents lived in Ypsilanti. When I stayed with them, we used to drive like a 30-minute trip to Detroit, drop them off outside the factory like 4:30 in the morning, and then we'd come back and pick them up around 3. But, now I'm thinking about it, maybe he didn't even work at the factory. Maybe he like made a mistake to work at the factory and then went out and did like his gangster thing.
Wow. Yeah, maybe. I think we busted this whole thing wide open.
Is your grandpa Bumpy Johnson? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
I just realized that's completely insane, everything I just said.
It was all a front.
Brandon's going to be making some phone calls as soon as we finish recording.
Papa, right after we're done here, even though he's like in an assisted living home, will be like, Papa, tell me the truth.
Are you the godfather of Harlem? What's going on?
Oh my God, I want to ask him if he's the godfather of Harlem. It's going to really confuse him.
All this time, he's been training you to take over the family business.
Oh man.
So the Callahan Auto Parts, they have to make a lot of sales in a very short amount of time, so they have enough money to stave off this buyout offer. And so it's determined that Tommy's going to he volunteers to go on this big road trip to all their clients and sell as much as possible to them. And they determine that Richard should go with him because Richard's the guy who knows all about the product and the operations and all that. He's the brains of the operation.
Right. So like basically Big Tom died, he said like he was talking about how brake pads were like the future of Callahan Auto Parts. So they're going to go off and sell all these brake pads and make all this money. Tommy Boy is like, Big Tom's son. So there's that connection there, that little familiarity with the clients. And, Richard is the numbers guy. So how could they fail? Road trip.
It's a foolproof plan. And I just want to note that this movie took about 33 minutes to set up the central premise.
Yes.
I'm just saying, maybe we could have gotten to that a little faster.
Yeah, I think we could have cut out the long 3-minute scene with Chris Farrell and his college friends that added to the story. Those guys did not come back.
Yeah. We kind of got that Chris Farley was a man-child before that.
Yeah.
But we find out we have a little plot twist. Before they go on the road trip, we got when they're at the fair, there's a big celebratory fair, and Michelle, Julie Warner's character, I'm trying to remember this because I didn't take extensive notes. Well, we discover over the course of this that Rob Lowe, he isn't really Beverly's son.
Oh no, he's Beverly's lover.
They're actually in cahoots. They are in cahoots together, and it's all this scheme to take over the company. So he's pretending to be her son, but he's actually her lover. and they're gloating because, oh, this is working even better than we thought. I thought this would be like a year before this paid off. They weren't expecting Tommy Sr. to die. But now they can take over the company or get the company and then sell the company, make a big profit.
Yes. Evil laugh.
Gonna talk to Dan Aykroyd, and then we're gonna have a scene with the weirdest acting Brandon's seen in a few weeks.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna get there.
Yeah. And then we see Tommy and Richard. They're on the road together, and they're trying to make sales, but it's not going well because Tommy's just such an idiot.
I will say that scene where at first the guy says maybe, it's like the only maybe they've gotten.
Yeah,
the nose for like, you know, this whole cut, you know, transition scene. And I did laugh pretty hard when he did the act out of the car without the brakes from the company.
Oh yeah. He takes some things off of the guy's desk. He's got like a prop car on his desk, and he's like, well, here's what happened if you don't have good brakes. And then he reenacts this whole hideous accident and actually sets the model car on fire.
Yeah, it's like all like bam, bam, and then all the kids in the car and the mom and dad are like, "Oh my god, my legs!" And here comes the ambulance, woo, woo! It's like it's literally like a child playing with like Tonka trucks.
Yeah,
it kind of is.
It's a very detailed scenario, though.
Yeah, he paints a picture.
Yeah, he might have wrote that on like on a napkin one time and like submitted it as like a horror story to like a literature class or something. He had that ready.
Could be. But gradually, like bit by bit, they kind of find their footing as a team. They discover that, like, Tommy develops a sales tactic that's very unusual, I would say. How would you describe the sales tactic, guys?
That comes later in the movie, but I mean, there are like a few other scenes where he's still trying to figure out how to be a salesman.
And a
person. I mean, there's one scene that's kind of iconic, I guess, where they're on the road, they're driving, and they actually end up hitting a deer by accident.
Crazy.
that was nuts.
They
instead of calling like animal control, they put the deer in their backseat and then they go on their sales call. Because they're on a very tight schedule, and
yeah, all right, I'll admit that makes no sense. I've never hit an animal with my car, but I'm pretty sure the protocol is not to put said animal carcass in my car and drive away and try to figure out what the next thing to do is.
That was crazy, and then it takes like a while for it to wake up, and then. That was just absurd because, one, you probably would have heard that the animal – figured out that the animal was alive because I'm pretty sure based on how long it was in there, probably shit in the car. So they probably wouldn't even be able to drive the car.
Probably, yeah.
You know what I mean? That thing should stink to high heaven whether it's alive or dead.
That's a good point. Yeah, the dead deer scene, it does lose a lot of credibility once you start to take it apart.
Yeah, so then, I mean, basically what happens is, like, the deer wakes up, it's in the backseat of the car, while they're driving, of course, they freak out, the deer freaks out, they, you know, pull over, get out of the car, and then the deer just, like, literally just smashes the car to bits, smashes the window out, smashes the roof out, and gets on top of the car and runs away. And, like, Tommy Boy was like, oh my god, that was awesome!
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this kind of happens in every road trip movie, if you ever see it, where at some point the vehicle that the people are in is going to, something's going to happen to it. It's going to get smashed up. It's going to run out of gas. There's always some type of car trouble when you have like a road trip movie. But this was something else.
That is true. Also, like a lot of encounters with wild animals. That's a big thing in road trip movies. I've been on a few road trips. I've never had an encounter with a wild animal.
Oh, you never almost hit a deer?
No, not that I can recall. No.
All right, that happened to me and my friend on one of our road trips. A deer just jumped out of nowhere, and we just swerved, but luckily we didn't hit it.
Oof. Yeah, that should have been
right. But I bet if you hit it, you could have been able to tell if it was alive or dead.
This is true, yeah. But at the same time, whenever that happens, that kind of situation happens, the brothers out of here, you know, they usually have get the opportunity to tell their stories.
Yeah.
They're dead.
So, so the cops are siding with the deer over you.
Yep.
It's like, what were you doing bothering this poor deer? You know, you do fit a description, Dan, I think. Yeah. Could you?
Let's sprinkle some crack on them and go.
Oh, man.
Nice.
And there's also another thing that happens, you know, again, where the car gets messed up, where they stop at a gas station to fill up a gas. And Richards tells Tommy to fill it up while he goes gets directions from the gas station attendant. Where the car is parked, Tommy needs to back it up a little bit so the hose will reach the gas tank. Yeah. And he backs it up with the door open. And as he's doing that, the door hits like a little divider and like bends the other way, the wrong way. And he's like,
oh, yeah.
But do you realize his whole purpose on this movie, in this movie, in like going to these companies, is to sell auto parts?
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to use a car.
Yeah.
No. He is not a bright person.
I guess he just never bothered to learn what his dad does or how everything works. He's just like, oh, yeah, that's my dad. I love him. Oh, well, I'm going to go here now and play in this puddle of mud.
No, I think he actually does know about what his dad company does. I think it's just like the higher level stuff because everyone at the factory seemed to know him and like him. So you don't get that. You don't get that that connection with people just because you know you're the son of their boss.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe it's some of the real life affection for Chris Farley leaking over into the movie or something. Like they like him even though they don't have much reason to. Oh.
Yeah, likeability goes a long way, guys.
Mm-hmm. I guess so.
So the guys.
You, George Clooney.
Oh wow! Shooting shots at George Clooney now?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
Okay. Damn. What did Clooney ever do to you?
He knows.
Well, George Clooney is a big prankster, so.
That sounded so ominous.
All right. Raven still bears a grudge over Batman and Robin, okay?
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. That movie was god awful. Wow. George Clooney's really getting in business on this podcast today.
but Tommy, he manages to successfully manages to get the door back in place so that Richard thinks that he damaged the door when he comes out to get back into the car.
Yeah, that was actually kind of funny. Like when Tommy gets out the car and he's able to like push and you know push the door so it'll like slam shut. So when Richard goes to the car and opens the door, the door totally falls off the car. And then Tommy's like, "What'd you do?"
That was kind of cute. That was cute.
That was funny. Then we have some other scenes. I mean, it's a pretty simple plot. We get, of course, the now iconic fat guy in a little coat scene.
Yeah, which is apparently something that Chris Farley would do just to amuse David Spade at Saturday Night Live when they shared an office together. And Chris Farley would always be like, hey, I've got a great new idea for a sketch. And David Spade would be like, it's not fat guy in a little coat again, is it? And he'd be like, no. And then he'd turn around and it would be Chris Farley doing fat guy in a little
coat. Well, that's so funny, though. That's like, you know, it's... I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, everyone enjoyed working with him and why he's so missed by that group. Cause he just was so like genuinely like always trying to make you laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. He seemed like he was one of those guys who never really turned it off, which
definitely
I think could either drive you nuts or make you a friend for life.
I mean, it also makes you depressed because you're like, you're that actor that always has to be on like a Robin Williams, you know?
Yeah, true.
It's like you have to try so hard to be likable. You have to wonder, oh, will they like me if I'm just me?
Yeah.
Oof, that got dark. I apologize.
Let me talk real quick though about that one scene at the hotel with the pool. What was that
about? Yeah.
That just makes David Spade come a creep. You just
There's a scene. They're at a hotel late at night, and there's a young lady who looked kind of familiar. I don't know who played that young lady, but it's a young lady in a bikini. She's out of the hotel pool, and David Spade he starts creeping on her from his window.
Yeah, it's much like the last movie we talked about, Stripes. It's a dude like kind of staring at a woman in a bikini, and she like notices there's no one around, so she takes off her bikini, and David Spade's like, oh, no one's around in this room either. So, and you hear something unzip, and five knuckle shuffle.
Yeah.
Never heard
and, of it. Okay. Apparently, the woman at pool was played by Lori Bagley. So.
Oh.
Shout out I have her. Not heard of before, but.
Shout out to her.
19 credits on her filmography.
Oh, nice. Look, shout out to Lauren Bagley. So, mm-hmm. As Richard's giving himself the old, beef stroking off, then Tommy comes in. And Tommy's like, what's going on in here? And that's when like Richard's like, oh, and he runs and hides in the sheets. And it's obvious what he was doing. And it's just, and Tommy just like, oh, were you watching Spectrovision?
But that was such a big window though. Like even with him having the curtain just open a little bit, it was just like, you could clearly see someone's drinking off over there.
I guess you just didn't see it or I don't know. But yeah, I guess, from what I've read, like a lot of the movie, it's based around stuff that like maybe the writers or the directors or the actors like actually happened to or stuff they've mm-hmm. stories they've heard about. You can tell like some of them, like some of the things that happened in this movie, you can tell, oh, that happened to somebody. Oh, that's somebody. So I'm assuming this happened to somebody, sometimes just walking on your boys, spanking off.
I feel like this is something that happened between Chris Farley and David Spade at some point.
Mm. Yeah, I've never done that, and I'm very grateful for that. But I imagine if that does happen, that's got to be a little awkward moment.
Yeah,
you're saying you've never walked in on somebody. I'm assuming, not that you haven't done the other thing.
Yeah, I've never walked in on a self love.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Well, yeah. So yeah, that scene's in there.
That is the scene that is in there, yes.
So then as the boys try to go from town to town to make a sale, they're very unlucky and they're just very dejected and it just looks like it's not going to happen. Their car is breaking down worse and worse after, of course, the door falls off and the deer smashes it. There's one point where they're driving and the hood of the car flies off. And like into their windshield, and they're like swerving in between both lanes, like oh my god! And then they pull over, and then they see Tommy when he changed the oil, he left the can of oil in the engine, and that caused the yeah.
Tommy should be dead.
if we reviewed this many times popcorn, over. Yeah.
If we reviewed this on Media Popcorn, Justin Brown, my co-host, would have, by 5 minutes into the review, been like, none of this should have happened because Tommy should be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
he should have been killed many times over by this point in his life.
The wrong Tommy died that day.
I mean, even at the end, when everything works out, he had a fake bomb on his chest. He's either going to jail or getting shot.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
We'll get into that. We will get into that. Meanwhile, back at the factory, Paul, Rob Lowe's character, he's sneaking in and he's changing orders on the computer. And so he's trying to sabotage Tommy and Richard.
Right. Like, so he's going into where Michelle worked because she works in shipping and handling and messing around with her, with her orders, like you said. At one point, he tries to take out the trucks. He tries to like, shoot the tires because, like, oh, there's no tires. There's no truck. They can't make deliveries. And then that leads to kind of wacky Three Stooges-esque thing he has with one of the guard dogs there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rob Lowe does a lot of physical comedy in this.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
yeah. Yeah, so after the oil can thing, you know, Richard and Tommy, they get very upset. They get into a fist fight and like by the side of the road, and it ends up with them just going into a diner, being very dejected and just thinking it's all over. Then the waitress comes and takes their order. Tommy says, "Well, I'd like some chicken wings." The waitress says, "Well, the kitchen doesn't open until whenever." But somehow, because you know Tommy wants the chicken wings, he's able to talk to you know the waitress and convince her into giving her some chicken wings. Because I think he kind of lays on that sad sack and like, "This is why I'm a terrible salesman," and blah blah blah. But he's able to talk to her and get her to make him chicken wings, and then
yeah. So this is the sales technique he basically gets is he is able to sell stuff by making people feel sorry for him and take sympathy on him.
Right. Yeah. Because like I mean, basically, Richard says, "Well, why can't you talk like that when you make a sale? Because you know you are people do like you. You're very personable. But you're just not confident. So you just need that same confidence in ordering chicken wings and apply that towards you know of." Selling these brake pads, and you know, then we'll maybe get something going here.
It's the chicken wing principle of salesmanship. I mean, it's a page one technique.
That's right. I believe it's Glenn Ross said that.
Yes. I think that was how Jack Lemmon's character made all his sales was through chicken wings.
So then they apply that technique, and they're able to make some sales. They made one sale, they made two sales, and they're actually, you know, getting some momentum. And you see them, oh, mm-hmm. Our luck is changing. They're on the road singing "Come On, Eileen" and whatnot.
Yep. There was a cute scene when they were like driving around on the road, and they're flipping around the radio dial, and they're trying to find something that they can both listen to. And they finally come on like that Carpenter song. I don't know the name of the song, but
Superstar.
Superstar. Okay. So, and they're both like, well, I guess this is fine if we can't find anything better. Oh yeah, that's good. And then we cut back to like a few minutes later when they're at the end of the song and they're both vigorously singing along, like, you know, "Don't you remember?" Baby?
And they're crying.
Yeah. And they're both like tears in their eyes because they're just so moved by the song. That was cute.
Yeah. I can see that as being like a thing when guys are on a road trip and mm-hmm. playing with the radio and then like, you know, "Hold On" by Wilson Phillips come on and be like, "Oh no, you can leave it here if you want."
And right, like, right.
And then they're both belting it out by the end.
Yeah, so they're making sales, they're becoming successful on the road, and Michelle's back at the office. She's making all those entries on the computer of all the sales they're making. But she unknowingly is being sabotaged by Paul.
Right. So
there mischievously looking all banged up and it's just on a fake phone call.
Oh, yeah. There's that, too. Like Paul, he's like, he has, like you say, his face is bandaged up and he's like, "Oh, no, I was just in here making a phone call. I wasn't doing anything, you know, wrong. Oh, well, goodbye." And then he just, yeah.
And also his shirt gets sucked off into one of those suction tubes that people used to use to mail stuff in her office style.
You said sucked off.
Yeah. We get to see Rob Lowe without a shirt off, without a shirt on.
Ladies.
Yeah. And apparently he was a big chest waxer.
Yeah. Ladies.
And gentlemen.
Fellas.
Rob Lowe, universally attractive man. That's all I'm saying.
Man, yeah, gorgeous. Like
like a Rick Moranis.
What?
Sure.
I've never heard that, but all right.
Mm-hmm. Look, don't judge. Don't judge.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying when you think, you know, hot beefcake, you don't go to Rick Moranis. But, you know, whatever. Different strokes.
Maybe you don't, Darren Patterson.
Oh. Expand your horizons, buddy.
Oh. What's on your hard drive?
Look, he is the Keymaster, okay?
Bravo, sir. Bravo.
Rick Moranis is a sexy, sexy man. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, baby.
I'm sorry. Where were we in the movie? I lost my concentration.
I got lost in Rick Moranis' eyes.
Rob Lowe was all banged up, and he changed the records for Michelle.
Yeah, yeah. So that's happening.
So at this point, the guys actually, their sales are in the upswing, and they actually hit their mark. They made all the sales they need to save the company. Everything is right with the world, so they make their back home to Sandusky, only to find out that all their orders got messed up, and because of that, all the original orders were canceled, and so all their work was for naught.
Things are shipping to the wrong places. They're getting the wrong items. It's a fluster cluck.
Yeah. So now, because of this, they're going to have to sell to Zelensky. They have to shut down the company because Zelensky just wants the name. He doesn't care about any of the workers there. So they're going to have to lay off everybody, and they lost.
And basically the town is going to go under now because pretty much everybody at the town worked at the factory.
Right. So, it's a
bummer. And they think that this is somehow Michelle's fault because Michelle was the one who was making all these entries. And she's unique in that she doesn't have a file cabinet. She doesn't have like a filing system. She just keeps the huge piles of paper in her office.
But that doesn't have to do anything with the computer inputs. That's what's so weird about them keep going to that. It's like, yeah, but these two aren't really correlated right now.
That's true. There isn't really much of a connection between the two because she was literally on the phone with them and she's just entering in the data she gets from them on the phone.
Yeah, I was wondering that too because it would be one thing if Paul messed with the files. Cause they mentioned in early in the movie that I don't use filing cabinets. I don't fuck with that. Yeah. I just keep files on top of stuff. So if Paul messes with the files, that would make sense, but he messed with the computer. So part of me was why mention this whole files thing at all then?
Yeah. And if there is some sort of hard backup, you would think that would have the correct data on it. This movie just falls apart.
God. All right, so at this point, Michelle's so upset that she thinks she messed up, so she quits her job. It looks like they have lost. But Tommy decides, okay, I'm gonna do a Hail Mary here. I'm gonna go to Chicago and plead our case to Zelensky, mano a mano, face to face.
Yeah, yeah, and he has to get to the airport on time. And Michelle is at the airport, and while she's at the airport, she sees Beverly making out with Paul, who is supposedly her son. And then she sees this, and she's like, hey, this isn't kosher.
That's nasty.
that means either there's an incestuous thing going on, or Paul's not really her son. Dun, dun, dun!
So, of course, after that, she decides to call her brother, who's a cop, to investigate into them.
Yeah. Yeah. Which he does.
Right. So meanwhile, after that, Tommy and Richard go to the airport, try to book flights to Chicago. All the flights are booked. There's no way to get on until, hours later when it's too late. And that's when Tommy has an idea. He says, hey, how much money do you have? And then he bribe some stewardesses or stewards for their uniform. So they go on the plane as stewards.
Well, we're skipping ahead a little bit because before that, they're trying to get to the airport and Richard's despondent over the end of the company. And he's drinking in the car.
Oh, right, right, right.
Oh, you shouldn't be drinking in the car. The cops here kind of frown on that. And Tommy's driving kind of erratically. And so the cops think he's a drunk driver, so they pull him over, and they for some reason and Tommy panics because Richard pukes on him, so now the smell of beer is in the car, and Tommy's like, oh, there's no way they'll believe I'm not drinking, and I'm thinking okay, apparently breathalyzer tests aren't a thing because he decides that outrunning the cops is a better idea.
Yeah, I mean, he also tells David Spade drinking in the car is illegal, which I'm like, I don't know if it's illegal for the passenger to be drinking in the car, isn't
it? I mean, there are open container laws, so maybe, it's not okay for anybody to be drinking in the car. That I could kind of see, but I was just like, they have ways to tell whether the driver is drinking or not. They don't convict you just on smell.
You smell like you've been drinking. up against
the wall. Yeah, I mean, you have to like breathe into a thing and then say the alphabet backwards and walk a straight line and all that fun stuff that movies have shown me for 40 odd years.
Right. Yeah. So at this point they drive erratically and then they drive into a field while the cops, you know, chase them. And then they pull over in the field and then they both get out and run. They're like, bees, there's bees everywhere.
And yeah, Tommy says this is a trick that my dad showed me. So apparently his dad got pulled over for drunk driving a lot.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. I was like, why did your dad teach you this?
Well, it's a valuable life skill. Rather than not drink in a car, you learn how to get out of a drunk driving ticket.
So it's like the dad was like, I won't teach you about my business or how I operate this whole thing, but I will teach you about how to get out of a drunk driving ticket.
Yeah, and I think I'm starting to understand why it took Tommy 7 years to get out of college.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy's also a psychopath that thinks acting mentally deranged is a better out than just trying to tell someone that you're not drunk.
Yeah, yeah. But he's like, oh, bees, they're all over me. And oh, don't come close because they'll attack you too. And it turns out that both of these cops happen to be allergic to bees, which
I don't
know how kind of a thing that is, but okay.
What luck.
So they're both afraid to even approach these two because they're being attacked by bees. So they're able to get to the airport.
Yes, they're able to
have poor vision because there's not one bee to be seen buzzing around.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not
but,
time.
But they make it to the airport and they talk to this worker at Midwestern Airlines. And I was kind of amused by this scene because it was a real tip off that the movie was shot in Toronto because this worker at Midwestern Airlines has this strong Canadian accent. Did you guys notice this?
I didn't even notice that, but
I missed
that. She's saying like oot and you know, she's saying out and about in the Canadian way. And it amused me.
Oh, wow. Good catch, man. I totally missed that.
Yeah. But like then, as Darren says, they managed to get onto this flight by getting it by dressing up as flight attendants, which I could not help but look at the scene from like, you know, post 9/11 eyes. And I was just like, oh, my God, they are going to be busted so hard.
And they are not.
They are not. They suffer no consequences whatsoever.
Yeah, like they get on, they even do like a little the demonstration about how to put on a life safety vest. Of course, Chris Farley grabs the child size vest instead of the adult size vest, puts it around his neck and inflates it, and the vest immediately starts choking him out.
That was actually really funny.
Yeah, yeah. And somehow they're not caught after this, and they're just allowed to continue on the flight. And then at one point they go back into the bathroom to change it to their street clothes. So they have those for the meeting. And they have a funny gag where like David Spade, like steps in to change his clothes. And then he steps out of the bathroom just like a couple seconds later and he's in completely different clothing.
Yeah. They don't explain it, but they just see Tommy's like bewildered look. Like, how did you do that?
Yeah, it was kind of weird because, like, the movie hadn't done much in the way of surreal humor before this, but suddenly, out of nowhere, there's just this surreal gag of him changing clothes within seconds.
I mean, what's also surreal is the fact that this movie posits that because David Spade and Chris Farley are impersonating flight attendants, this flight actually only had, like, one attendant fully working.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. So many things do not make sense.
Post 9/11, baby.
Post 9/11. But they make it to the factory, to the big high rise in Chicago, where Dan Aykroyd's company is, and they're gonna make the Hail Mary gesture to save their company.
Right. Well, at one point, when they're trying to find him, they see him outside the building, but then they lose him. And then at one point, like they're trying to find him, and then at one point, Tommy Boy kind of walks into like a bank nearby and he he's trying to find Zelensky, and then he shouts out, "Look, hey everybody, this is only going to take a minute." And of course, everybody immediately thinks he's there to rob the bank. Everybody gets down to the floor. The cops, the guards, throw him his gun, and then Tommy's like, "Oh, this I did this wrong," and immediately leaves.
Yeah, and he leaves, and he commits so many crimes. David Spade, and they're like, he's like, just walk away slowly. And in the background, we see like cops rushing to the bank.
Yeah, that response time is no joke.
No, no, they must have been just like right next door to a police station.
I guess so. But so what happens is like they get into an elevator, they see Zelensky, they get into an elevator with him, and they basically kind of talk to him about it. And because I think they saw a commercial with him earlier. And he seemed like a nice guy in that commercial. So Tommy thinks, oh, he must be a really nice guy in real life. Yeah. And it turns out he's not.
He's a man of the people. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then if you find that.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, then they find out that whole man of the people thing is just a persona. And he's more of like a hard-edged businessman.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a corporate type. He's not the blue-collar guy that he presents himself as.
Absolutely. So then, you know, he says, yeah, look, I'd like to help you, but, you know, business is business. I can't do anything about it. And, you know, it is what it is. And there's also another weird thing that happened here. At one point, they walk into his factory, the auto parts factory, and then they walk past this one big kind of wind machine. And as Richard walks past it or stands in front of it, Richard... his toupee flies back, and then that's when we all realize Richard is bald.
Yeah, so his toupee is like, you know, still fastened in the back, but it's just blown straight off his head, so it's just all askew. And it's another weird surreal gag that just kind of comes out of nowhere, which I was just more like, huh, than oh ha 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 ha.
Yeah, it was a weird little thing they just threw in there at the last minute, but it was like,
because they tease him about like, oh, it looks like your hair's thinning, or like it'd be funny if you were bald or something like that.
There is no setup or foreshadowing for it whatsoever. I mean, like, they could have had him like be obsessive with his hair or be very particular about it or combing it throughout the movie, and then that would have been a funny payoff. But as it is, it was just like this random gag out of nowhere.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, okay, I guess that's something. So, you know, Zelensky says, yeah, I'm sorry, you know, there's nothing I can do. Excuse me, now I got a meeting with some people in the clothes on your factory. Tommy and Richard see that, Beverly is there with Paul, and yeah, they're going to close the deal. And then Tommy's like, hey, wait, that's Paul. What's going on here? And, it looks like the bad guys have won.
Yep. The end. Bad guys win, they lose the company, and that's Tommy Boy, everyone. Unexpected dark ending.
yes.
No. Michelle reveals what she saw at the airport, that she saw Bo Derek making out with Rob Lowe, and she reveals that they are not actually related. They're not mother and son. And Rob Lowe actually has warrants out for him in several states for various petty crimes. And, you know, he's a con man, basically.
Right. So basically with that, they need to, you know, they need to make another Hail Mary pass. This Hail Mary part two. So Tommy Boy looks around. He sees, oh, there's like a construction guy with road flares. Oh, there's that camera crew, the news crew from when I robbed that bank, quote unquote. And then he gets an idea. His idea is to get a bunch of the road flares. He sees them, a construction guy, take them to his chest like they're a bomb, and make his way upstairs to the meeting.
It's a foolproof plan.
Yep, it's nothing illegal about it at all.
He commits so many crimes within 20 minutes. It was absolutely absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really weird. And like the news crew is covering this, and it's, you know, it's basically like a terrorist act. Like he gets his way into the boardroom with this, and they reveal the whole deception, and like they come to an understanding. They work out a business deal. Like Dan Aykroyd says, like, oh, well, I was basically, you know, just I wasn't buying it to preserve the factory. I was buying you guys for the name, and I just basically want the box. I want the name, and then I can sell my stuff with it.
Right. So, yeah, so Tommy makes his way up there. He, I mean, since he has a bomb on him, the camera crew follows him up. And, yeah, basically he makes a deal with Zelensky on the air. And, you know, since Zelensky is very concerned about his image, he plays it up like, yeah, no, this is fine. We can totally do this. And he's able to make a deal. He's able to channel his father, and he's able to save the company.
Yep. Yep. Which you'd think that deal wouldn't be valid since it was basically made under duress. But but everyone accepts it and acts like it's binding.
Right.
So, yay!
Yeah, let's not get caught up in the minutia. So then after that, Michelle, reveals that, oh yeah, these two guys are con men, Beverly and Paul. They read Paul's rap sheet. I think Paul makes a run for it, but he gets caught by the cops. There's some more physical comedy where...
I know, I was just going to say, he got caught by the cops by having a gym bag randomly fall on his nuts.
Yeah.
He runs out into like the auto testing area, and he ends up on like the hood of a car that's about to run into a wall to test that. And then they hit the brake device for the car to break the car. And then Rob Lowe flies off, and he flies into a seat where they're testing a seat by dropping sandbags on him, and they drop sandbags right onto his nuts. Cause you know,
nuts.
Testicle damage is funny.
So infertile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Rob Lowe gets arrested, and somehow Beverly doesn't. She hooks up with Zelensky, and like, even though she's also a con man, she doesn't go to jail or get arrested at all. She kind of.
I didn't get this at all. Why? Why do we? Are we just seeing Rob Lowe punished when Beverly was just as much a part of the scheme? I mean, does anybody want to see Dan Aykroyd and Bo Derek suddenly dating at the end? I didn't get this at all.
That was weird.
That was so weird. Not, like, only one third of the bad guys are punished in this movie.
Yeah, that was weird. Basically, then
that's confused, you guys.
But don't think about it too much, man. It's just a fun comedy.
Okay.
And so that's pretty much it. Like, Tommy's able to save the company at the last minute. He goes back home to Sandusky. He promises
they also reveal that Beverly was already married to Paul. So because of that her marriage to Tommy's father wasn't valid. So therefore Tommy still has a controlling share of the company.
Aha!
So Tommy still has the company and it's still under his control. So anything Beverly tried to do is invalid.
That's how the law works, I guess.
And then she gets to date Dan Aykroyd, or Dan Aykroyd gets to date her, whichever person you think is better in that scenario.
Right. And and then that's pretty much it. Like Tommy makes his way back to Sandusky. He promises everybody, all the workers, that like as long as he's there, as long as there's a Callahan there, you will all have jobs. And he makes his dad proud. What's that?
That's a weird promise to make because Tommy Boy's not in the best health himself. So, just saying.
So dark.
Yep. And then he makes out with Julie Warner.
Yes, he makes his dad proud. And the end.
Yay!
All right. So I'm guessing both of you guys didn't care for this movie that much.
No, I did not.
Wow.
I did. It didn't work for me. I think I made the right 1995. Me made the right call to not see this movie.
I will admit, like a lot of this movie, if not all of it, depends on like you'll like it depending on how much Chris Farley you like. I think we all can admit, like Chris Farley is like the heart of this, and so like he makes this movie go. So yeah. Like, if you really like Chris Farley, you really like this movie. If you can take him in small doses, you'll think this movie's okay. If you don't get his shtick, then you won't like it.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's just okay. I think without having David Spade there to balance this, it would have this would have been terrible from front to end for me. But because he has someone to play off of who's the straight man to his insanity, it worked. It was fine. It was an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was a quick movie. It didn't I was going to say it didn't overstay its welcome, but I did find myself checking the time left a lot during this movie. Didn't really work for me. I think Brandon put it really well early on, where he was just like, a little Chris Farley goes a long way, and he works better in small doses. So,
all right, fair enough. That's Tommy Boy. I know, guys, if all our listeners, if you have any thoughts about it, let us know. I think we, I found it charming enough because, like, he's a big, lovable dog of a man. So, I wouldn't say I love this movie, but I found it charming enough.
Yeah, but are you like, in regards to the Man-Child thing, real quick? Like, I was thinking about, like, because John mentioned that earlier, like, that he's a Man-Child. And I'm thinking about this, and, like, the Judd Apatow movies with the man, you know, the man boy, mm-hmm. like Seth Rogen's character, stuff like that. And I thought the most recent one, The King of Staten Island, I keep wanting to say King of Scotland. the King of Staten Island is the first one where the Man-Child has, like, a kind of a diverse group of friends, and some are brown people. And then uh-huh. that's the one where it's like, these Man-Child, the way that they support their habits is by being drug dealers and robbing places. Just something to think about.
Hmm. Wow.
Stay woke. Wow.
No, I mean, that's a fair enough. Fair point, my friend. Yeah. Then
I think I much rather would have seen, like to see Chris Farley and David Spade try to pull off a heist or something rather than go around selling brake pads. Ooh. I don't think like a road trip to sell brake pads is an inherently interesting premise for a movie.
Yeah, you know? The Midwest. that'll get them going.
Yeah, I was just like, no, I'd much rather see those two pull off a heist. That would be entertaining to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason so many people liked it because like the chemistry between Farley and Spade is like the main thing about this movie, and like I think a lot of people like to see what they have because it reminds them of their friends. Like, oh yeah, me and my friends used to do road trips and hang out like this. So a lot of it is like kind of, you feel like you're just hanging around with your college friends in a lot of this movie.
Okay.
I'm trying to paint a pretty picture here. I'm trying to make it a little better.
All right.
All right. And that's our podcast, guys. Brandon, thank you so much for doing it. Thank you so much for being here, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I really appreciate it. I've been listening for a while, so I greatly appreciate you having me on finally as a guest.
Oh yeah, we appreciate it. It's been tougher for us to have guests on, you know, in the age of us in the age of COVID, where we're recording separately. So we're happy whenever we can make that happen.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have anything to plug? Anything to promote?
If you guys liked my commentary, check out my weekly movie podcast called Medium Popcorn. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all the good stuff. My friend Justin Brown and I, we just review movies old and new. And then I also have another podcast called What Kind of Mayo, where I just am revisiting the old 1990s Nickelodeon cartoon, Doug. It's as painful as it sounds. I'm feeling a lot better. And I just worry mostly about Doug's mental health and trying to figure out what race Patty Mayonnaise is.
Sure. That seems like an excellent use of your time. I didn't mean that as dickish as it sounded, but
no worries. It's not. It's not a good time.
That was like David Spade-ish
type. I think I'm in the David Spade headspace right now.
Okay. All right, well, guys, yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at SNL Nerds Show. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Trumbull Comic, T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L Comic. And Darren, what are we going to do next week? We talked about this and we decided to do another new movie. We had so much fun doing King of Staten Island. We're going to do another new movie with an SNL alum.
Yeah. Apparently, the Lords have blessed us with the riches of streaming movies with SNL characters come out recently. So the next episode, we're going to talk about Palm Springs, the Andy Samberg flick.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of good things about this. It's got Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti, who you probably remember as the mother in the last season of How I Met Your Mother.
Spoiler!
Well, you know, sorry. I'm particularly sorry if you've seen the finale of How I Met Your Mother.
Not good,
you guys.
That was a bummer. I was let down.
That's a bummer. Don't get me started. I'll get started on that next week.
Okay. So, yeah, that's our podcast, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Always, follow us at, you can look at non-productive.com, donate to our Patreon, and that's our episode.
Review us on iTunes, please.
That too.
We need more reviews. We need more ratings and reviews.
Yes, give us the love.
Give us the love. But we'll be back next week with Palm Springs. But until then, nerds out.
Nerds out.
Nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.